Well, thanks. Well, I want to applaud and give kudos to each of you that you're starting your week at this beautiful hotel and resort, engaging in a conversation and a dialogue about STDs. That is commendable. So really do appreciate that you're spending your time with us. You know, C.T. Studd, who was a missionary from England and went to both China and Africa, he stated this. He said, "Some want to live within the sound of a church or a chapel bell. I want to run a rescue shop within a yard of hell." And I think that a lot of you are drawn here because your heart is truly wanting to know, how do we engage the millennial? How do we reach in depth with that relational intentionality to make a difference and to expand our services so that we really are drawing in those clients? I think we would all have to agree in our nation that there is an ever-widening gap that is going on between culture and the church, which in essence is a culture gap between us and Christ and many of those clients that are searching. And I think with the cybercrime issues on the rise, with the rise of pornography and the issues and how that's affecting sexual relationships across our nation, knowing that STDs are at epidemic proportions, and then looking at the whole social the confusion that comes about with sexual orientation. We have such an opportunity to be able to step in and to get God's perspective on how we can leverage this gap between these two issues, and we can step in as gospel whisperers to those in our communities. I think if we recognize that each one who comes through our door is certainly a pre-follower, then we suddenly can adjust our mindset to see this as probably one of the most covert missionary operations that any of us can be a part of, because we are engaging the culture where they're at. Just as a little bit of a sort of a GPS start to where we're going, you'll see that you have a black folder. And if you'll look, we're going to kind of go through this in a sequential manner, but we want to make sure that on the one side, you'll see this document that's called Expanding Your Reach, and it just gives you some of the verbiage that perhaps you might take to use in a newsletter or with your board proposal, just some of the premise as to why you might consider adding STI services. On page 3, there's also sort of a direction to our donor website, www.lifevoices.org, that has some more materials that may be helpful to you. There's a frequently asked questions page on the website that you can go to that may answer some of the questions that you don't have answered today. You'll also notice that there is a form that's just called STI Training Seminar. If you would just jot down questions that you might have in the next few hours on this piece of paper, and then if we don't get to those questions by the end of the day, we're actually going to leave time at the end for my team and I just to do kind of a panel. So if you have questions and we've not addressed them, that you can ask those so that we can all share in that question and answer time. I would like to introduce the other members of my team that you're going to be hearing from today so that you'll know who else is with me. I have Clark Caton, who is the Director of Intervention Services, sitting at the back there, and he's going to be talking today about how we take the why and the motivation and how that is really driven by the spiritual component that we can have in the exam rooms, in the context of how we are sharing the gospel with our clients. So he'll be sharing with us on that. And then Jordan Griffin is the Director of Advancement. And Jordan is going to be sharing with us how we engage through marketing and branding as far as the engagement with our community, our constituents, and our clients, and kind of sharing what that aspect is. So I think you'll be pleased to know you don't have to listen to my voice for the next 4.5 hours, but my team will also be sharing with you, and we'll all be there for question and answer as we go along. You'll also see that there is a copy of what says index, and I want you just to pull that out for a little bit, and we're just going to kind of go through this. What we want to do today is not to say that the way that Life Choices does things in Joplin, Missouri is the only way to do it. This is not STD program in a box that you simply take and put in your particular location. This is just an opportunity where we're sharing, where we're paying forward what God has done in our context, how it's worked in our community, and if there are things that perhaps would be helpful in your community for you to be able to take some of these tools and these resources and implement them in your setting. So there's going to be a sheet that's going to come around that will allow you to put down your email. And then what we will do in the next couple of weeks is we will send you a digital download of all of the information that is on that index so that you will have all of our forms, all of our policies and procedures, all the tools, all our inventory logs, anything that we found helpful in our setting, we want to just gift that forward. Now, you can take it, and there's a place where you can remove our logo, and you can insert your logo so that it's ready, but then obviously you're going to tweak that so that it's used in how your medical director would feel most appropriate. You can eliminate the things that are not applicable to what you're using. But if you can find ways, and when you find ways to improve, please let us know, because we're always looking at how we can also be relevant and be tooled and equipped. So just know as we're sending that around that just if you'll give your email, we'll give it. And it'll usually come in a Hightail form that you can then download, save on your computer, and then use to tweak and move forward with that. I think at this point in time, if you want to take out the first PowerPoint, the one that's called Expanding Your Reach, Adding STI Services, we're going to start just kind of walking through what it takes to add some of the services in that manner. You know, I think that when we're looking at adding sexual health services, you know, for me, having lived in Africa 20 years as a missionary nurse, I've often thought that I think God was using those 20 years to prepare me for the mission field that is right here in our very own backyard and the opportunities that we have to use medicine to engage those that are in our communities. And I think we would have to admit that nationally, many in the pregnancy movement, in our pro-life movement, we're really looking at defining and refining what are strategies for maximum impact when trying to reach that abortion-minded, that abortion-vulnerable client. We know that, you know, I think the reason that the pro-life movement started was in response. It was a reactive response to wanting to reach out there and care. But if we're going to continue to have impact, we have to be not just reactive, but we have to be proactive. And how do we make sure that we're understanding that it's not just about a young pregnant woman? It really is about engaging the culture of those that are sexually active and really having that intentional infusion to be able to build that relationship. So before there's even the opportunity of that pregnancy, we've been in to be able to establish a relationship and move forward. I think we would all agree that so often the clients that come through our doors, they're really just looking for intimacy. They're looking for that factor of connecting with someone, and sex seems to be the way that our culture has perpetuated that notion that if we just step in that direction, they're going to receive all the love. And yet what we're seeing is this cycling decay as those relationships just leave another wounded scar on an already hurting heart. And so that cycle continues. I think the national focus really has become more holistic as we're looking at it's not just a physical response. It does have to be that emotional and that spiritual as well. And we're recognizing that the dangle of a diaper, the image of precious feet, that those things are not resonating with the millennial client. They are wanting choices, and they're wanting to be in control of those choices. They're wanting the empowerment. I know that there's probably several others in this room that are excited to hear Dr. Meg Meeker. I heard her several years ago and was very privileged to read a book that she's authored that's called Epidemic: How Teen Sex is Killing Our Kids. And one of the things that she notes in there is that the feministic movement, along with the emphasis on birth control, it's really changed the demographic of the sexual health epidemic and the crisis in our particular nation. And she states, and I quote, she says, "We have obsessed about teen pregnancy, and the pill helped us to focus on only one consequence of sex, that being pregnancy. But we are now cursed with escalating STD rates that have risen much faster than the teen pregnancy rates have fallen." And she goes on to say that today's teen live in a time when sex can be toxic and life-threatening. Well, the CDC would concur with many of the statistics that she has. And we know that there's an estimated 20 million new cases of STDs that are every year. There are an estimated 24,000 women who will become infertile every year due to an undiagnosed sexually transmitted infection. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. There's a quote from the CDC that states that a large portion of ectopic pregnancies occurring every year are due to the consequences of pelvic inflammatory disease. And we know the root cause of many of those are from things like chlamydia, gonorrhea, and bacterial vaginosis. A lot of PID cases are connected especially to chlamydia, and in the state of Missouri where we're from, they actually noted that 92% of all positive chlamydia cases had no symptoms. They were completely asymptomatic. So it's so important when we have this population of pregnant girls that we're engaging, that we're looking at how can we care for not just the baby, not just the fetal product, but how are we caring for her and how are we showing that we have that intentionality to connect with her? I think one of the more alarming facts to me is also understanding that 50% of sexually transmitted infections are with those that are aged 15 to 24 years old. And that's the very demographic that we're trying to reach. You know, if we look at those that are having abortion, about 57% are aged 20 to 29. And the others, 15 to 19, they make up an additional about 17%. So what an amazing opportunity that we have in our clinics to really engage and to make a difference in this area where there are these sexual health concerns. We know that there is irrefutable medical research and technology that is confirming the dangerous connection between those that have an active sexually transmitted infection and those that are undergoing an invasive procedure, such as an abortion. And that combination can be lethal. According to the Department of Health and Human Services, and this is a quote, the presence in the lower genital tract of gonorrhea and chlamydia or bacterial vaginosis is associated with an increased risk of post-abortion infective morbidity. It's not often the abortion itself that is causing the complications that lead to death. It's often the effects of the infection ongoing that lead to a lot of the death that is connected. As we're looking at, according to the CDC, more than 1 million pregnant women are annually diagnosed with a sexually transmitted infection. That STI and abortion connection is really a primary focus when you're talking to your constituents, when you're talking to your donors, of the importance of why we would add STI services. We know that the risk of an ascending infection up into the tubes when someone is undergoing a procedure such as an abortion can happen during pregnancy, can also happen during a gynecological exam. Sometimes it's given no consideration when someone goes to an abortion clinic to have any kind of treatment that is given. And that's an area where we can step in and provide services for testing and treatment as needed. The STI-infected woman is at a very high rate of risks for infection, and the effects on her unborn baby can also be devastating. And we'll talk a little bit more about that this afternoon when we kind of go into the nitty-gritty of not just the why, but the what and the how we do the assessment and the treatment. As we're seeking to find out what those innovative strategies are to make a difference, I think we have to ask ourselves, what can we do? How can we adapt to propel ourselves into having impacting action? And I think if we're going to state that we think other clinics should be defunded, we're going to have to show that we are a clinic that warrants providing the services that many would say the other clinics are doing and that we're not stepping in to do. And so I think, you know, for far too long, sometimes we've taken that back seat to really a profit-making industry that is drawing in our clientele. And maybe it's time that we quit complaining and grumbling on the sidelines and figure out what is a winning strategy. How do we get into the game? How do we make a difference? You know, in a world of free marketing enterprise, if I say Pepsi, someone automatically is going to think Coke. If someone else says Mac, somebody's going to think PC. If somebody says news coverage, somebody's going to gravitate to CNN and somebody to Fox. But when you say Planned Parenthood, what is the antithesis? There is none. There is not a universal standard as to what that represents or what that states. Well, we need to consider in our town, can we be that clinic that is the option, that is the clinic that people defer to, not second, but first? One of the things that we found in our particular community is that we get referrals from our Planned Parenthood because we offer more than what they offer. We've also had people from their clinics come to us for services because they'll say, you guys are just so nice. So I think we have so much more to offer from a holistic perspective, but it is one of those things that we have to be challenged. And the motivation is not what we're against. Truly, the motivation is, what are we for? I know for us, we want to provide a safe place where young men and young women can make an informed choice, understanding that there are choices in our community. So how do we promote in our communities that we are pro-people? We are pro-men, and we are pro-women, and we are choosing to serve all. At our clinics, our tagline is, the choice is yours, choose to know. But we want to make sure that it's an informed choice that they're making. So with medical accuracy and with medical best practices, we have the opportunity to engage them in that dialogue. You know, the research that is out there has kind of continued to show, along with some focus group participation that we've had, that the image depicting needy and crisis and distraught really has to kind of go away. That emphasis on political and having the agenda, that's not what's resonating with those that are needing our services. They want to be engaged in a place where they feel that there is someone that understands where they're at and that they're looking for this relevant alternative. Through statistical data that we've collected over the past about 13 years since we've really been adding SDI services, one of the things that we've noticed is that for every year that we've added and continued with our sexual health services, with STD services, our abortion vulnerable rates have increased. Now, I know in many sectors they're saying, man, we're just not engaging the same number of abortion-minded or abortion vulnerable. We're not seeing that. And I think partly is because with every year that you're engaging and developing a relationship, you have that much more opportunity through those relationships to engage others that are in that same sphere. The opportunity for that broadened scope and that relational build bridging has really been huge for us. If we're front and center when they have that sexual health need, then if they do have an unplanned pregnancy later, we're on the radar. And Jordan's going to talk a little bit about this a little bit later, but, you know, at health fairs, what we're finding is, if you go in and your only platform is pregnancy, well, I'm on birth control, so what you have to say is really irrelevant to me because it's not going to happen to me. And so they don't even keep any of our information. But if we're there with information that says, hey, hooked up, got more than you bargained for, hey, need to check your status, hey, we're here, that seems to resonate because suddenly we're on their radar as to what potentially could be going on today. So we move from a sort of a passivity, a reactive passivity, to much more of a proactive surge. For every STI client that we engage, we truly are being able to potentially prevent an abortion. Now, those don't show on your statistics because there's no way to track how many who might avoid some sexual risk by choosing to eliminate some partners through a very proactive opportunity to be able to have the sexual health services. And so what we do is we importantly and very intentionally infuse their lives with good sexual risk avoidance in any conversation when they're coming into the clinic asking about sexual health needs that they may have. The verse from Isaiah 54, I'm sure many of you are familiar with, but it was really key to us when we determined that we needed to kind of step out of the box that we were in. And I love how it reads from the message, but it states, enlarge your house, build on additions, spread out your home, for soon you'll be bursting at the seams. And that is one of the things that I would just caution as you're looking at adding SDI services, is you need to be ready for the explosion of individuals that do seek to come your way. And how do we prepare to make sure that we're ready to be propelled onto the map? The motivation to expand for us was not merely just a demographic, a geographical. It really was a philosophical. We wanted to be more inclusive. We didn't want to have just one focus on one symptom of a broken sexual health world, but to embrace that anyone who is in that search, in that quest for intimacy that might need medical services, could come to us and receive care. Now, some people may say, well, isn't this kind of mission creep? Like, aren't you stepping outside? Like, well, I think that all depends on what your soul focus on. Is your focus just on saving a baby, or is that eternal perspective of also being able to speak into the lives of the father of that child, to speak into the lives of the mother of that child? If we say we're pro-people, then we aren't just pro-baby, we're pro everyone that walks through our doors. As we began to kind of monitor the research and decide how we wanted to take that philosophical step to the next level, it did take an opportunity to educate not only our board and to have them come on board, but also our constituents. And there were a few people that, you know, you kind of had to pray off the board before you got to move into that direction. So, you know, it does take some timing. And as somebody said, you know, it is all in God's timing. And so I think that's something that we have to be very aware of, is that we're looking at how does God grow this in his timing and his move. But we did realize that we wanted to engage that college demographic. And so we knew that promoting an image of choices, of convenience, of confidentiality, but also compassion was so important to the millennial generation. We wanted a clinic that was not gender biased, one that did not alienate men, but really welcomed both genders into our community, providing an urgent care kind of walk-in clinic for anyone that was facing a sexual health. Well, that just moved us further into the strike zone of those that were sexually active in our community. So we decided that we were going to go to where the people were, and we took a satellite clinic and opened it right around the corner from one of our universities and opened it right next to a sports bar, one of the busiest sports bar in town. When we first moved into that location, the owner, the landlord, was like, now, you know, they sell alcohol here. And we were like, yes, didn't Jesus turn the water into wine? Like, you know, this is, we want to be where the people are. And in fact, actually adjusted our hours to be open on the night longer in the evening when they had their buy one, get one free pizza. So it really was a strategic opportunity to be right where the people were and to be engaging them as they walked in. This particular clinic, it does have free Wi-Fi. It has a Keurig bar so that we really are engaging. And if someone comes in and we've got a couple people in front of them, we can literally say, if you're okay, give us a text number. Why don't you go get pizza? Why don't you go get a Coke? Or there's a coffee shop and a donut on the other end. Go over there, and when it's about 10 minutes before we need you to step in, we'll send you a text so that you'll know that you're next up, so that they're not having to sit in our lobby, but they can actively be engaged. This opportunity at this clinic, also, they can do online appointment scheduling, so they can do their paperwork ahead if they choose, and then when they get there, they're ready to go. So it is much faster, and it does allow for that college demographic to feel like they're getting that express moving in and moving out. Well, shortly after opening this clinic, I do believe that just the intentionality, the credibility, and the integrity with which people in our community saw that we were not agenda-driven, but we had a social cause platform on which we were responding. We received an invitation from another city that's about 30 miles away, and they had asked us to come in response to what they were seeing as a very less-than-served community, and that was a Hispanic population. And so we actually opened a third clinic in that area. Well, these opportunities all dovetailed together to then give us the opportunity to go on site to a rehab and a shelter for women that's very closed and is not faith-based. But when they saw that we were doing sexual health services, they invite us to come in, and once a month we go in and we're able to offer services right there. Well, you can imagine that some of the most abortion vulnerable women are those that have come out of drug rehab or maybe relapse, and if they can make a connection with us when they're in a safe place, then they're coming to us for services afterwards. Well, let me just tell you, and that's what I'm saying, hold on, because the expansion possibilities when you're adding STI services have led to even other opportunities with the millennial. Never would we have imagined that we would have engaged so many millennial men, but one of our gals was beginning to notice that there were several men that were coming in for testing in a certain demographic, and they were asking for HIV and Hep C. Well, we somehow got on the radar of the cage fighters in our community that had to have these in order to participate in the national level. Well, I personally have not been to a cage fight, but I understand that there are a lot of groupies and that this is an excellent place for sex hookup in our community. So understanding and knowing how many unplanned pregnancies may come when these tournaments are happening, if we're engaging with these young men, we're also going to be engaging with those that are in the community. So just know that God may blow the socks off of you when it comes to the different opportunities that you have. Well, so convinced were we by the information that recently we had learned from those in our community that had started a bit of a conversation about the human trafficking that we decided ourselves to go to the U.S. Prosecuting Attorney's Office and ask about some of the statistics that we knew were happening in Southwest Missouri. Being located on I-44 and 49, we knew that we were in traffic routes where some of this was happening. And we decided that because God had already positioned us well with a team that was responding to the sexual health crisis issues, we had the excellent platform of being able to literally provide an exam room on wheels and to go out into the truck stops, to go into the areas where there was sex industry happening. So I think when you're contemplating adding sexual health services, you have to understand that God may take you and move you, literally take the great commission and move it into a go mission that may take you in areas that you have never anticipated going. William Carey, a missionary to India, has this quote, and I love it. So hold on to it because it's a good one for this particular topic. He said, "Be bold enough in your faith to take on an objective that's large enough that it is doomed to fail if God is not in it." And when you're contemplating adding sexual health services, just know that it may seem daunting, it may seem overwhelming, but if God's in it and the timing is right, He is going to make all of those entry-level points and all of those steps possible. We can choose to be complacently comfortable with where we're at, or we can challenge the status quo and really bump ourselves into a new level of getting out there and being on new front lines. So we're going to look at some of those preliminary steps. We're going to talk about the focus client, about the facility readiness, facilitating personnel. We'll talk about the financial cost, fundamental essentials, flow of services, and then we're going to talk about full circle benefits. And before we take a break after this session, Clark's going to come up and talk about some of those full circle benefits that really is the motivation behind what we're doing. Michelangelo said that the greater danger for most of us is not that our aim is too high and we miss it, but that it's too low and we make it. And so I just want to challenge as we're talking about the best practices and the medical excellence that we want to move into it. It may be done in incremental steps, but don't stop with feeling like, oh, we're just going to do pee in a cup and gonorrhea and chlamydia and that's the end of it. Because really we have this opportunity to go to the next level. Take each step and see how can we bump it? How can we become that clinic where all of the services are offered? I think one of the things that we also have to be careful of is if we're marketing that we're adding STI services, we want to make sure that they know exactly what we are providing and we're not providing. I cannot tell you how many people have said, oh, I got a PAP, so I know I got all my testing. A PAP does not automatically test for gonorrhea and chlamydia. It does not automatically test for herpes. Sometimes there's that misinformation. So whatever entry level you have in adding sexual health services, just make sure that you're educating people well to know what you do provide and what you don't provide. As you're looking at identifying your market, I think you have to look at who are we going to market to? And you have to be really careful that you don't market yourself right into burnout. You may have limited resources. You may have limited personnel. You know, we wanted to make sure in our demographic that anyone that might be pregnant, might become pregnant, might cause a pregnancy, that we were reaching out to that demographic. The youngest client that I've seen was age 11. The oldest was 76 and was a victim of a home invasion where she was brutally raped. She didn't have any place to go for the sexual health services that she needed. So it does give you a very diverse opportunity to be the hands and feet of Christ, no matter what the circumstances. You're going to look at your facility and go, okay, can we repurpose some of our rooms? We've changed most all of our exam rooms to where we can also do counseling in those rooms because we know we have to multipurpose. We've gone through 4 renovations in our one clinic, and that was after adding the other 2 clinics. You know, we've also looked at some of our entry-level rooms. Do they speak to the generation? How are we making sure that they're multipurposed for a myriad of uses and purposes? Some of our rooms, we've tried to make sure that it has sort of a gender neutrality so that it's not so feminine that it's off-putting to male clients. For a minute, let's just talk about some of our facilitating personnel, because that's so important when we're offering the medical services. Obviously, we need to have that licensed medical professional physician who is serving as the medical director. And I know in many arenas, there are some medical directors who feel very comfortable with reading an ultrasound, but they aren't very comfortable with adding the sexual health services. And so I've seen it in some contexts where they actually have 2 medical directors. They have one that's willing to oversee the ultrasounds, and they have another one that is not necessarily a GYN or an OBGYN, that may be an ER doc, a family practice physician, even a pediatrician that is willing to oversee the sexual health services so that you really can diversify. For us, we started with 1 medical director who was and still is our medical director after 16 years. He is an OBGYN. He reads all of our ultrasounds. But he soon realized that when we were wanting to offer HPV screening and wanting to offer PAPs, he couldn't do it alone. He has his own very busy private practice. So he asked one of his partners if they would be willing to come so that every other week we had a physician on site that would be able to offer that gold standard of care in doing a pelvic and a PAP if indicated. Well, pretty soon they invited some of their colleagues to the banquet, and we had a dermatologist that went, "Do you realize that the whole thing with STD testing started in the realm of dermatology? If you look back at syphilis, and so why are you guys not treating HPV warts and herpes?" And so he came on board for once a month. We now have 10 physicians who have been challenged and come into our facilities who see that they don't have to get in a plane and go to Haiti for a mission trip, that they can every few weeks, and really they are just on a rotation of every 6 weeks, they come down and offer 3 to 4 hours where they feel like they are serving their community. In fact, the one hospital actually gives us 3 GYNs to be able to facilitate some early prenatal consultancy that we can do with those that are very abortion-minded or those that have decided but are waiting for their Medicaid to kick in. So it's exploded with, I think, a lot to do with the integrity and the credibility with which we're doing services that engages others to see that we're not a fake clinic, that we are providing services, that we are really offering things that matter to those that are in our community. Now, we didn't start, like I said, It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. We started with 1 physician, and as we've grown, God, in his own timing, has added. When I very first started, I was hired as a part-time nurse. I just did 15 hours a week, and we had 1 other nurse that did all the ultrasounds. Currently, we have 5 RNs that are on staff, and many of those are part-time because they're busy mamas too, but they give a couple shifts each week to help. And then this also explodes the opportunity for volunteer medical professionals. We have CNAs, medical technologists, that can come and draw blood. They can talk to people about sexual risk avoidance, and they can have awesome spiritual conversations. A lot of times when we're doing the scanning, we know that that's pretty much limited to those individuals that have been trained to do the scanning. So how else do we implement some of the other professions, with the nurse practitioners, et cetera? So this is just a super opportunity. And from a development perspective, you get 1 doctor, he comes in, he hosts the table. You get another doctor, they come in, they host a table, and so you can see that God's provision does increase as you're thinking outside of the box with adding sexual health services. For just a minute, let's talk a little bit about finances, because I know that's where it can be the real catch a lot of times. The CDC Division of Prevention states, and I quote, in addition to human costs, STIs add $16.4 billion to the nation's health costs each year. They do point out, however, that for every $1 spent in screening and treatment, you save $12 in treating the complications that are in an ER. This is a key piece when you are going to develop relationships with donors, those in the medical profession, those in a hospital. We recently negotiated with one of our area hospitals to say, look, you can spend a dollar with us, or you can wait till you have this PID case that's going to show up in your ER, and you're going to have to treat those complications. They gave us a $12,000 in-kind gift towards labs because they went, yeah, this is a savings on the front end. Now, it's not cash in the bank, but they contracted to do that much lab. So if we can use some of the verbiage that resonates with investment into the community and into healthcare, I think it can make a very big difference. So you want to educate the board, you want to educate the public as to how this opportunity really is saving taxpayer dollars and saving just some of the hospital costs that may be in your area. Now, some of you may already be doing ultrasounds, and so you may have some of the equipment. You may have the exam tables, you may already have gloves and table paper, etc. So let's look at what does it take when you are adding STI services. So you're going to have the labs, you're going to have potentially additional personnel if you don't find all of them as volunteers. The materials that you may need, the equipment, you're looking at the miscellaneous things. For us, you know, we're looking at for that person that engages in all of the full services that we offer, it's just under $12. That's not for the lab, but just under $12 if we consider the PAP supplies, we consider the brush, the tourniquet, the needle, the collection tubes. And you'll find that a lot of the labs, they provide the centrifuge, they provide the biohazard bags, they'll provide the courier system at no charge. I know that CareNet has a good working relationship with the CDD, which is a lab that kind of connects and allows you to send things back and forth. And we'll talk more about that a little bit more this afternoon. Supplies are going to be an ongoing expense, and depending on what services you offer, that's going to dictate what kind of supplies you may need. I think one of the things that's kind of interesting is a lot of times you have a VBS or you have a Sunday school class that wants to participate, and they may not want to do change for bottles. They want to do something tangible. Well, they can start an opportunity to collect Band-Aids and cotton balls. You don't have to go to a medical supply house to get some of those things. If ever you have the chance to visit us at Joplin, you will see that literally how we set out our supplies, it's a Dollar General cookie sheet, and then we just have the Office Max little dividers that keep all the spaces. And someone was throwing away these medical surgical towels, and they're like, oh, I bet Life Choices could use those. So those are what we use to keep our equipment covered. We use speculums that are disposable, so we're not having to use the whole idea of the sterilization, but they're disposable with a light system. In fact, many of our GYNs are using that already. So there are ways that we can really tap into those supplies that we need and use those in an appropriate manner in our own settings. As with any kind of services, there are going to be those fundamental essentials that we really have to make sure that we are geared up on. You know, so we're going to look at OSHA. If you are doing ultrasound, you probably already have some OSHA guidelines in place, CLIA, the biohazard, your safety plans, then of course you want to make sure that you have insurance, and then the discussion as to whether or not HIPAA is something that you want to be controlled or you're simply complementing with your confidentiality statements. On the OSHA, there's a lot of different opportunities where you can do trainings out there. What we've chosen to do is every 2 years we send two representatives, one from the medical, one from the non-medical, that go and just get a refresher course. A lot of times you come back from those and they're blown away. It's like, okay, now we have to have a full body wash station with a shower. And it's like, no. I mean, so you kind of have to figure out what is within your community. You can also invite in an OSHA representative, and they will not write you up. They will simply advise you as to what things you might need in your context, and then they can give you a certain amount of time to get that prepared. So you may also have the opportunity where you know someone who is a OSHA and safety inspector that's one of your donors that would be glad to come in and consult and give you some opportunities. So, you know, it's really not a big issue. It sounds big and scary. And if you go to the website, it is terrifying. But really, if you break it down into small little bites, it really is not that complex. You can also go to your medical director's office and ask for their OSHA safety officer and to walk through what do they do, because that's the standard to which we are held, is whatever's happening in our medical director's office is how we should be conducting business if we're also offering medical services under his or her license. With CLIA, the interesting thing is that when I started with STD testing about 13 years ago, we did have a mid-level CLIA waiver. And so that meant that we had a microscope, we could pull it out, we could do smears for BV, for trick, etc. And I can remember the excitement the first time you saw trick, we would cross the screen and everybody in the building came to see it. Well, now there are incredible testing kits out there that are CLIA waived that allow you to do collection of vaginal swab for processing that do not need a microscope. And so literally we do all of our collection and we do all of our testing with no CLIA mid-level. It's all CLIA waived. We don't perform any diagnosis of those testing. We send them all out. And the CLIA waiver test that we do, which would be your pregnancy test, the BV and the trick, those are all things that are done in-house and they're CLIA waived. So it's a much more simple process than I think it used to be. Biohazards, you do want to make sure that you have provisions to discard anything from the specimens that are used for the vaginal collection, etc. Safety plans, those are things that we all should have in place anyway. Insurance, I'm sure that we're going to have many exhibitors here today that will offer those services. I know that there are several out there that will offer an additional rider to help cover you if you are adding STI services to your current offering. As I mentioned, you will get a digital download of everything that we have today. There are other organizations and other entities out there that you may want to check. You may want to take a visit to someone else in your state that's already doing STI services. You may want to ask to look at their policies and procedures. Again, we're not saying this is the only way to do it. We're just saying that this is something that we can gift, that we can pay forward to our nation because of what God has faithfully done in our particular location. We're going to talk for just a little bit about the flow of services, and that's kind of how in each different demographic it's going to be different depending on how you implement that. But this is where it really all comes together, and it's so important to have those willing advocates, counselors, educators, whatever your term is for those lay advocates, your phone volunteers to be that first impression, whether it's on the phone, whether it's on the text line, whether it's at the window. We want them to be the director of first impression, to make sure that we're warm, we're welcoming, and we're inviting them in. I remember when the discussion was, how are we going to introduce STI testing to our advocates? And there was a delightful woman who had served as an advocate for several years. And Wilma was in her 70s, and we were like, how are we going to get this past Wilma to say vagina and penis and scrotum and, you know, that just, how are we going to pass the Wilma test? And in reality, what happened was we kind of ran it by her first. And her response was, well, what took you so long? We've known God said all along, you don't do it, you don't get it. Now you finally got me something that helps back up what we've been saying all along. So I think a lot of times it's our presentation. If we're doing it with confidence and we know that this is biblically based good information that is CDC accurate, then there is no faltering. There is no hesitancy. And now currently, if you join on our staff, it's just as though every pregnancy center in the whole wide world does STI services because that's how it's done. So I think a lot of it is how we broach the subject and how we introduce it. Careful scheduling is going to be really important when you're adding STI services. And I know we talked about that client control, air traffic control, that, and I can't remember what's your name?
Jessica.
She is going to be the air traffic control for her clinic. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be someone that is medical, but it has to be someone that has a working knowledge so that when you're scheduling, you know, and when you're triaging and how you're incorporating what can be said and can't be said on the phone. One of the tools that we developed in-house for our particular individuals is we wanted something that would help them know that if you are not medical, you cannot say medical information, but you can drive everyone to an appointment. You can do some careful questioning to screening. If you've got someone that calls and they say, well, I've got a bit of a fever and I've got this discharge and I can't have sex because it's so painful, that is not a client you want to put off for a week to see. In fact, that's a client that may already be suffering from pelvic inflammatory disease and you want to refer them to an ER immediately. So there are some things that it's so important that we understand what are the scope of services that we offer and that that is clearly communicated to any phone volunteer, to any individual that we're looking at in offering those services. When an individual comes, we want to make sure that we are never so booked that we do not have the opportunity for that very abortion-minded woman and or the abortion-minded man to come in and get their appointment. So we have to leave that wiggle room in the schedule that allows them to be served. Always the abortion-minded clients are those that are top priority. And what we have found that is for far too long, we've kind of alienated or left the man out of the equation. And we know that 85% of single women who have chosen to have an abortion have stated that if the presence and the support of the father of the baby had been present, they would not have chosen to abort. So what we've implemented at our clinic is the opportunity that when the phone rings and we ask the questions of when was your last monthly period, so you're coming in for a pregnancy appointment, will the father of the baby be coming with you? And a lot of times it's like, why would he come? Well, we have services for him as well. So can we schedule for him to come as well? And when they come in, we don't distinguish between who, you know, which person should be seen and which isn't the client. We give paperwork to both the male and to the female. Both of them receive almost identical paperwork that helps to give information. Then they're each seen as individual clients. They're each given the decision guide so that we can find out what is his perspective. We find out so often that the men are more pro-life than the women, but they've been so defeminized with our feministic movement that they feel like they can't have a voice into the conversation. So whatever she says, it's her body, it's her choice, and no one's helping them to unpack their voice. So that has made a huge difference. In fact, we've noticed that 95% of males that have come in have chosen life after they've had that counsel with one of our advocates to determine that that's what they would choose to do as well. Sometimes they will choose life, but the partner will not. But it is an opportunity to have that conversation and that dialogue. After reviewing all the forms, we have our clients engaged. We do ask for a photo ID at the window. Sometimes there's some hesitancy, some concern, but really that's standard of practice in all of our medical offices. So we do ask for a driver's license. If somebody says, well, I don't have an ID or they're fearful, we say, not a problem. Let us take a picture. We take a picture, we print it out, and we ask them to sign over the top of it so that we have some way to make sure that there will not be any kind of Medicaid fraud or any kind of fraudulent services of using someone else's ID or their information. So that's just another layer of making sure that we're doing things in a best practices manner. After the advocate is reviewed and she's gone to get the female client, concurrently the father of the baby is being met with someone and taken back for also that review. The client is then going to collect the urine, and we are going to run that test. Now, everybody can do that different. Some people do the self-administered. In our particular state, in our demographic, what we found is that there was actually a CLIA inspection at one of our clinics that was a couple hours away, and when they came in, they asked, what kind of office makes people run their own pregnancy tests? Like, are you truly doing, you know, is this for verification of Medicaid, but they're running their own tests? Like, we've never been to a place where you're asked to collect your own pee and run your own test and then write your own documents. So we were really challenged to consider having the nurse run all the tests. But what we've done is we have developed a system where we do a log so that it's not us dictating when we're interrupting the advocate who may be having an incredible conversation, but she can come out, check the log. Only those that have been approved can log in the pregnancy test as to whether it's positive or negative. But that's been a way that we've kind of moved towards making sure that the assurity and just not that presence of sometimes the notion that we're a fake client because we're doing our own pregnancy test. That there's not a right and a wrong in that. It depends on how you're administering it. But that is just a challenge that know that others in the community may be looking at your practices to measure whether or not you're doing it to that standard and whether or not they feel that that's correct. At the same time, we're offering gonorrhea and chlamydia screening to men and to women because we know that so many of the times it's asymptomatic. This is something that we offer to both. Creative implementation of tooling of our advocates and our staff has led us to develop an STD flip chart. We used to where we were predominantly using the hard copy, and we soon found that if we put this in a digital format, then suddenly it must be much more important and it must be more relevant. And we found, especially with our college demographic, that if it was in a self-paced version where they could go through it at their own rate, that they were much more accepting. And then at the end of it, the RN can walk in and say, so tell me, what brings you here today? And we can go on to do our assessment with our forms. But having the education first often gives them more of an insight into maybe what symptoms they had or what concerns have brought them in, things that they've never concerned about. It's not in a lecture style. It's really then in a self-paced module that allows them to get that information. Obviously, if someone is coming in and they're abortion-minded, we're not going to hand them a whole module on STD testing. We really are going to click into just the section that's on abortion and STIs to make sure that they're understanding that connection, that there is this danger zone if they've had an invasive procedure, such as a surgical procedure associated with abortion, that they know that being screened for gonorrhea, chlamydia, and the BV swabs are so important. Once the vulnerability of the client has been established and we've offered the testing, we can then offer the ultrasound. And I just want to be really clear to state that, you know, adding STI services should never in any way replace ultrasound services. I have been privileged to do ultrasounds for 13 years, and there is nothing that replaces truly that beauty of being able to see and to reveal that heartbeat to a young mother that has no idea. I will say, though, we have found that with the additional of STI services, we have been able to engage some that otherwise are not interested in an ultrasound. They know they want an abortion. They don't want to see the baby. They don't want to be manipulated, but they do want to come in for testing, because if this is going to harm my body, it really is all about me. We're very egocentrical in that it's my body, it's my harm. Yeah, if you can do the screening, I don't really want the ultrasound, but I do want the STI services. Well, most of the time we can help them to understand that we can do the testing, but before they spend that money to go and get that invasive procedure, that if we can let them know if it is a viable pregnancy, that is something that we can offer to them. And a lot of times they're wanting to know, well, how much is it going to cost me, you know, depending on how far along the baby is. So being able to do the ability to see what trimester they're in is also important. So offering the ultrasound is still that amazing use of technology that is the window into the womb. An appointment with a physician really does allow us to expand that. And before they see the doctor, we give the opportunity to do the case management, to find out, you know, what are some of the restrictions to wanting to carry this baby? Are they financial? Is it support? How do we dovetail and give them information about our parenting classes, maternity homes, adoption information, all of those things, that tool after they've seen where they're at in their pregnancy to know what direction. It helps to establish further that care plan, whether or not they need to come back in for a repeat ultrasound or they need to see a physician for ongoing. The appointment with the physician for us just allows that point of contact, whether that's a prenatal consult, whether that is just an opportunity for ongoing services that they may need. You know, I think the relationship that is established through a multi-visit approach really builds trust and helps individuals. You know, we don't want to promote a frequent flyer kind of mode, and sometimes we have to kind of catch ourselves because you'll look at a chart and that person's been there 15, 20 times. But I think we also have to realize that sometimes it takes years of building trust before that gospel seed that's planted actually takes fruition. And it may be through that ongoing relationship that we have the opportunity of truly not just engaging, but I think we want our clients to become so exposed, so infected, and so infused with the Holy Spirit that they're going to overcome any of their sexual health issues and really allow the Spirit of the living God to come in and make a difference. So I think it's really important that, you know, as you're looking at how do you add those STI services, if you are taking the mindset that you are going to be very client-centered and very customer care oriented, it's not a one size fits all. So to say, oh, we do two appointments and that's it, it really depends on the individual. At the very first appointment, we're going to do the assessment, the intake. Why are they there? How are we engaging them? What do they believe is the reason that they've come in? Is it because they've had an unplanned pregnancy and they're looking for an abortion and they need gonorrhea and chlamydia? Is it because they've walked off the street and they have a discharge, they have an ooze, they have a bump, they have something that's brought them in? At that point in time, we're always going to do education along with assessment at that very first appointment. And then at that point in time, at that first appointment, doing the pregnancy testing, doing the STI, doing the ultrasound. So all of this is happening at that first appointment. The results, that's one of the ways that we have to engage to get them back in the building. You know, sometimes if what they're seeing is the ultrasound and then they walk out, they have no reason to come back. But if we're offering results for the STI testing, they have to come back to get the results. And so that's another point of contact, another opportunity to engage them. And then if there needs to be treatment, the treatment can be done at the same results appointment. Or if there needs to be a physician consult, there may need to be that third appointment. So don't restrict yourself to thinking three appointments and that's it. Maybe they have a dermatology issue. Maybe they have HPV genital warts and they need to see your dermatologist. That may precipitate a fourth opportunity for them to engage with your staff. An integrated sexual health approach, I think, really does become full circle when we seek to reach our clients physically, emotionally, and spiritually. So no matter where a client is in the spectrum of their sexual health crisis, genuine love and honestly a genuine communication that we care is going to do far more than any just service that we're throwing out there and they're offering. It's the option to embrace the opportunity to care with those that we discuss with. You know, I think so many of our clients truly are veiled in the darkness of sexual deception, and it's really only through our engagement, it's through that gentle touch, it's really through the respect and the dignity that we are able to communicate the compassion of Christ. And it's only then that they'll be able to see the Jesus that we want them to come to know as the everlasting drink of water. I think so many times in professional nursing circles, we throw around the term holistic, and yet we don't implement it to its full circle. We're okay about the physical and the emotional, but we don't want to go there with the spiritual. And that's why we're engaged. That's the motivation. Clark Caton is going to come and share with you. He's been on staff right at about 4 years with us. I actually met with him when he was speaking at a conference, and his particular workshop was on compassion fatigue, which I think resonates probably with everyone in this room. He was doing it for those that are social workers, EMT responders. His background is as an EMT. When he came on staff, he was fostering with his wife a little boy, and their whole purpose of fostering was to reunite that little boy with his mama over the time that she was getting well and that this little boy was being cared for. Since then, Clark has become the daddy to three girls that he has adopted out of the foster care system, and it's just been a real blessing to serve alongside Clark. And I've asked him if he would come and just share some of the spiritual emphasis that doing STI services really opens up to us as nurses, as healthcare providers, and of those in the pregnancy center when it comes to that adding sexual health services.
All right, I'm going to lead with a quote here. How many of you would be familiar with G.K. Chesterton? Is that name familiar to you? Okay, well, this is a quote of his. And it's not all of it, but I'd like to get some feedback from you. How do you think this quote ends? It just starts out, every man who knocks on the door of a brothel is looking for what? Just throw a few ideas out there. Yeah, looking for sex. Okay, what else? Yeah, that's exactly right. Every man who knocks on the door of the brothel is looking for God. And what Chesterton is alluding to is that there are really two great needs in the human experience: to know and be known by the other, capital O, which is God, and to know and be known by another human being. And that both are rooted in a common origin. The first, our desire to know and be known by the other, is in a most basic sense our spirituality. And the second, our desire to know and be known by another, is in a most basic sense our sexuality. So in the beginning, in the garden, all was one with God, and Adam and Eve were one with one another. And the language the scripture gives us for this experience is that Adam and Eve were naked and they felt no shame. But when Adam and Eve sinned, the cosmos was severed, creation became disconnected, and humans were cut off from God and cut off from one another. Suddenly, the language in the scripture changes to Adam and Eve realized they were naked and they felt great shame. The English word that we have as sex, scholars believe, comes from the Latin root word sicere, which is basically defined as to sever, to cut off, to amputate, to disconnect from the whole. It's where we get other English words like dissect and bisect. So our sexuality then is this profound awareness of how we have been cut off from other humans and all of the ways that we go about to try to reconnect with them. And our spirituality is this deep recognition of how we have been separated and cut off from God and all of the ways we go about to try to reconnect with Him. The Hebrew word that translates to know and be known is yada. And this word is used interchangeably in the Old Testament to describe both intimacy with God, or our spirituality, and human intimacy, our sexuality. And that both of these are central and universal to the human experience. They are both expressed as yearnings, urges, desire, and passion that cause us to seek out this reunification. And I think this is what Jesus is getting at when he encapsulates this human condition for us in the greatest commandment, that we are to love the Lord our God with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength, intimacy with Him, and that we are to love our neighbor as ourself. So when a man or a woman has no intimate knowledge of God, there's no framework or design for healthy sexuality, resulting in broken and dysfunctional human relationships. The inner quest of the soul for intimacy with God becomes an outward quest of the flesh for pseudo-intimacy with others. Paul summed it up this way in Romans chapter 1. He said, refusing to know God, they soon didn't know how to be human either. Women didn't know how to be women, and men didn't know how to be men. Sexually confused, they abused and defiled one another. Men with women with women, men with men. All lust and no love, and they paid for it. Oh, how they paid for it, emptied of God and emptied of love. Jesus gives us a remarkable glimpse into this reality through his conversation with the woman at the well. If you recall, Jesus is passing through Samaria when he stops to have a conversation with this woman to talk to her about her thirst. And I'm going to read a little bit of it, but I want you to pay special attention to how Jesus is weaving together and interlacing her thirst for sexuality and her thirst for spirituality. Picking it up in John 4:13, Jesus said, everyone who drinks this water will get thirsty again and again. But anyone who drinks the water I give will never thirst, not ever. The water I give will be an artesian spring within, gushing fountains of endless life. And the woman replied, sir, give me some of this water so I won't ever get thirsty. I won't have to come back to this well ever again. You can almost imagine Jesus waiting expectantly to see if she was going to make the connection that the thirst he is referring to is not of the flesh, and the water he is offering cannot be drawn with a bucket. To help her along, it's canny how only after her plea that she not have to return to this old well that Jesus requests that she goes and gets her husband. Because she's had no husband. She has no husband. She's had five, and the man she's currently living with is just her convenient sex partner. Her thirst for intimacy has taken her from the bed of one to the arms of another. Day after day, year after year, drinking from the wells of her lovers, only to become thirsty again. And here she is begging Jesus, give me some of this water. I am tired from the thirst. These old wells do nothing to satisfy me. Then the conversation shifts to one about worship. When realizing Jesus was a prophet, she says, tell me this. Our ancestors worshiped God on this mountain, but you Jews insist that Jerusalem is the only place to worship, right? And this was Jesus's reply. Believe me, woman, the time is coming when you Samaritans will worship the Father neither here at this mountain nor there in Jerusalem. You worship guessing in the dark. We Jews worship in the clear light of day. God's way of salvation is made available through the Jews. But the time is coming, in fact, the time has come, when what you're called will not matter, and where you go to worship will not matter. It is who you are and the way you live that count before God. Your worship must engage your spirit in the pursuit of truth. That's the kind of people the Father is out looking for, those who are simply and honestly themselves, naked before him in their worship. Jesus' encounter with the woman at the well is an example that must change the way we think about how the gospel is shared with our clients. Firstly, we must take into account that Jesus was willing to physically go into territory that was seen as off limits. Secondly, he was willing to have a conversation with someone that was seen as unclean. Not for the sake of condemning her, but so that redemption could take place. And based on his own testimony, we know that Jesus came for everybody, whether they be male or female, young or old, born or unborn, gay or straight, married or unmarried, pregnant or positive for an STI. His grace and his truth extend to everyone. The question is, are we making his living water accessible to them? Is there only living water in the well of Jesus in the early morning hours when the reputable women arrive? Or does it flow throughout the heat of the day when the hookers and harlots make their walk of shame? On the whole, many Christians tend to see the world as those who are in and those who are out. And we have erected boundaries or fences that designate who makes up those who are on the inside and who makes up those who are on the outside. Of course, our desire is to get as many people on the inside as we can. So we construct a list of what is required for them to get in our box. And in every case, three components will be present. For someone to respond to the gospel, they must believe as we believe, behave as we behave, and if they do so, they can belong to what it is we belong to. Every church denomination or faith community decides for itself what constitutes right belief, right behavior, and right belonging. But the consensus is, if you want to be part of us, then you have to become like us. This is the dominant way that Western Christianity creates community around cultural and moral behavior. Evangelization is essentially a process of getting individuals to conform to the ways of our community. The problem is that often these rigid boundaries actually make it extremely difficult for our clients to respond to Christ. But the good news is there's a different way for us to think about evangelism. As an alternate view, we can imagine Jesus at the center of a continuum where everyone who has ever lived is set in some relationship to him. The closer someone is to Jesus, the more morally aligned or holy they are. The further someone away from Jesus is, the more morally disaligned or sinful they are. An example of someone very close to Jesus in proximity would be the rich young ruler, who was a righteous Jew who claimed that he had kept the law since birth. On every measure, this would certainly be someone that would fit well in our box. In fact, he would likely be seen as a model box attender. He has aligned belief, impeccable behavior, and belongs to the people of God. We could probably also conclude that he's never caused an unplanned pregnancy or contracted an STD. On the flip side, take the woman at the well. Based on all criteria, she would have to be outside of our box. Her religious beliefs are wonky, her behavior is repugnant, and she belongs to a mixed race, crossbreed people group. It's probably safe to say that along the way she's had an unplanned pregnancy or two, and possibly even an abortion. But here's the crazy thing. When the rich young ruler encountered Jesus, he rejected his message and turned his back on him. Yet when the woman at the well encountered Jesus, she received his message and turned towards him, meaning she was actually in and he was actually out. The issue of a person's response to the gospel is not a matter of proximity, how close they are to the center, but rather orientation. Are they moving towards the center? Evangelism is not an issue of getting people in the box, but rather creating a way for them to experience Jesus in such a transformational way that they might orient their life towards him. Entrusting to the Spirit that right belief, right behavior, and belonging to the body of Christ will come in their journey towards Jesus. There was once an American businessman who traveled to the Australian outback on an expedition. And he observed that there were huge cattle ranches with thousands of cattle, but interestingly noticed that there were no fences. So the businessman asked his guide, how is it that the rancher can manage his cattle and keep them from wandering off without any fences? And the guide responded, well, here in the outback, we don't need fences. All the rancher has to do is sink a well of clean, fresh water, and the cattle won't wander very far.